go.
Impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
And with that, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. Quick apology is in order. We are a little bit behind on updated stories on the website, and that's apologies to you guys. For about the last 3 weeks now, trying to recover from a heart attack, and I've gotten a little bit behind, but trust me, we're going to get that caught up in the very near future and get you caught up and brought up to date on the investigations we've got going. So stick with us. I promise you, it will get better. Meantime, there's always all kinds of things going on in Louisville, so let's just get started and let's say hey to John, one of our co-hosts. How are you, sir?
Not too bad.
And it looks as always. Yeah, you're there. And it looks as always, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
All right, Mr. Springsteen.
It's got a little bit cold wet out there the last couple of hours. I tell you, I just stumbled to the front porch. I'm suffering from some Meniere's disease right now, so I'm really, really dizzy. I'm kind of wobbling and hanging on to people on the wall. No, and I went out to the front porch. I said, you know, it's a little bit chilly, and it's raining. I think I'm going back in. You must have a good day at work today, I'm sure.
Hello.
Hello, you there?
Yeah, hold on. We're popping out. Let me actually get to a different location. It's probably me. Hold on.
Okay. We're going to have like at least an eighth of an inch. So JCPS is going to set in for the week, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be under 40 degrees. They may be scared it's going to turn into ice or something.
They don't want them to have a summer.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, Ed, are you with us now?
I'm with you. I should be with you now, yeah.
Okay, all right. You know, it is funny because what was it? Was it Thursday or Friday last week? They predicted this snow to come in the afternoon. We basically didn't get anything. We didn't even start doing any kind of moisture at all. ACPS has got to be sitting back with a little egg on their face for some of the days that they've shown the kids school out this year. It's going to be interesting. But I tell you, we've got a lot of things going on, and it's interesting to me. I kind of want to start out, guys, with a poll that the Courier-Journal is running. It's an online poll on their website, and I just happened to look at it earlier. And here's the question they're asking, and then I want to let you guys think about this. We'll start with you, Ed. But the question is this. Do you agree with the federal judge's ruling that Kentucky must recognize same-sex marriages performed legally in other states? Mr. Martin.
Is that the question?
That's the question.
I would say, yeah. Equal protection under the law. of course, you know, with me, with the libertarian pedigree, I tend to look at it and say that, you know, the state just needs to recognize it as a legal, you know, a legal commitment between two consenting adults, you know, essentially forming a partnership. State doesn't have any interest in, you know, the morality or the religious aspects of it. So, yeah, and as the judge, yeah, as far as what the state should recognize as marriage, absolutely equal protection under the law.
Okay, John.
On this, I have to admit, I have mixed feelings. I'm all for, you know, if people want to go out and legalize the same-sex marriage. I'm a very, very big states' rights advocate when it comes to a lot of things. So this is the thing that gets me. If in Indiana, which it would never be legal in Indiana, they're crazy, but if marijuana was legal in Indiana, and you were to have it in Kentucky, where it is not illegal, well, you'd be arrested. It would be illegal here. So when you come to states' rights and you say that the state has recognized same-sex marriage, well, yes, that state has. So you stay in that state. What's happening right now is you have people from different states to go to states where it's legal and get a legal marriage certificate there and then move back to a different state where it's not legal, where they're refusing to recognize same-sex marriage. Well, I'm sorry, and I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I really do. I wish that I could change my mind on this, but it comes down to it. States' rights means it's legal within that state. You can't go to another state and expect them to recognize a different state's law. That's where this is.
And I'm kind of in agreement with that. State laws, you have to have states' rights. I think that you're right, Ed, about equal protection and clause and everything else, but where does it stop? Because, you know, in Colorado, he mentioned marijuana, legal marijuana. So do we recognize marijuana prescription from Colorado and Kentucky?
Could I clarify that I am not against gay marriage? Let me just say that. But I am, when it comes to state rights, I believe that this is a different issue.
Well, I think some of the problems arise that in some cases we're looking at something that does fall under state rights, which is an individual's choice of something, and it doesn't really involve any other rights, and a lot of times it doesn't, you know, a lot of the other behaviors that fall under states' rights don't exactly, they don't cross lines on government, you know, intra-governmental agencies. The problem is you have, when you get into a legally recognized union, you have everything from federal tax rates to, you know, a lot of federal issues, a lot of state issues, a lot of local issues, and there has to be some uniformity. So, I mean, you know, I agree in states' rights, but it helps, you know, for that matter, at what point do states' rights do you have to get redundant? You have to go through all 50 states to have, say, like a business partnership recognized. And that's kind of how I look at it. A business partnership is established generally with a federal tax ID, and because the activities tend to be affected both, you know, on a federal level, as is the case with marriage. Some of the benefits and penalties, if you want to call them that, exist on a federal level. So the federal government, you know, there has to be some uniformity. Otherwise, you form a business partnership in Kentucky, you go to Indiana, they say, well, you know, maybe we'll recognize it, maybe we won't. And you can say, well, we got a federal tax ID number, and they say, we don't give a crap. Yeah, and At what point do you start, you know, there's got to be some uniformity. And since the whole legal union thing involves everything from Social Security benefits, insurance benefits, a lot of things that are portable, but, you know, that can be transported over state lines and that have jurisdiction over state lines, there has to be uniformity.
Well, here's the thing for me, and this is something, and I want to make sure our audience is very clear here. Here on this show, we have always supported, you know, the gay lifestyle. Your choice is your choice. What you do in the privacy of your bedroom is privacy of your bedroom. Me and Ed have always agreed on that and always will. You know, one of the other things that we agree on this show many times is that there should be equal benefits for gay couples. But the issue here for me isn't a matter of equal benefits. The issue here for me is the calling everything marriage, and you got to recognize a marriage from another state between two, you know, same-sex, from a same-sex couple. And that kind of brings me back to an argument me and you had on air that we actually agreed on, is why is government involved in the definition of marriage anyway? Marriage is, is typically, I mean, that should be a religious right.
No. Here's why. Because you have a separation of civil marriage versus religious marriage. And in other words, if the federal government is going to say that two people living together for 7 years are automatically qualified as married, then you can't say that that's a religious thing.
You're talking about common law marriage.
Yes, common law marriage. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing that exists today. You have certain cases in civil marriage. What if two atheists decide that they want to get married and spend the rest of their life together? Is that a religious thing? You know, you have to have a separate set of circumstances.
Well, that's exactly what we're talking about, though. We're talking about the fact that you call anything a marriage. If you want to call a union between two people, same sex or opposite sex, a union, that's fine. If you want to call that a civil union or anything else. But the problem is, what typically happens is when you think of the word marriage, most people typically think of a religious ceremony.
Honest, I'll be honest, and this is where I get I rub people the wrong when it comes to this. In some instances, when I think about marriage, I actually look even further and go back to the old days where women were pretty much used as property exchange, and that's where marriage really originated. If you go back far enough, it was about a king and another king getting together and having their kids get together and. That was that. They had more land. They had more friends. They had more this. They had more money, more power. They expanded their empire, and that's where marriage originated. And a lot of things have changed like that, and things have gone a certain way societally. But if you're going to have anywhere in the United States or on a federal level, if you're going to have civil union, it is a marriage. It's just not a religious marriage. It's two people coming together for the rest of their life, and I do believe that they should qualify for all of the same punishments that any other married couple would get. But, I believe that you can have civil marriage and religious marriage be separate things.
Well, for me, I mean, you know, I had a religious ceremony. So for me, I got married to God, and that lasts for the rest of my life. That's my vow. That's my promise toward God to my wife. So, for me, that's something that will always be there. From now until the day, I will always be married to this woman. You know, so I mean, for me, that's what I'm saying about the religious aspect versus the civil. Okay, because I'm a religious guy who believes in God, and I believe marriage as a sacrament. You know, however, there are a lot of people, like you mentioned, atheists, you know, who want to get married. So my question is, why does the state define anything as a marriage, as a government, when if they would just define everything as a civil union per se, and gave equality, equal rights, as Ed is talking about, and Ed, I want to weigh in on this, you know, you give equal rights to couples who have chosen to live as a couple. You know, there's nothing wrong with equality without getting hung up in all this gibberish with what you call it. Would you agree, Ed?
Yeah, well, I think it really comes down to words. I mean, we've had Chris Hartman on before, and the LGBTQ community, they want the word marriage. And, you know, I actually have to go back, and it's like doing some machine stuff from time to time. There's actually the term where you marry two parts together. And yes. So actually, you know, it's be interesting to get into the word marriage, because sometimes I think the religious community has sort of hijacked it, and the marriage is marriage. But, you know, when you put two parts together in a machine, you marry those parts. So it's a coming together. So whether, you know, modern language, it's just like the conservative, you know, liberal and conservative or whatever, we've gotten so far away from the original definition. But yeah, I just think that they should recognize a legal union, a legal partnership. You know, it'd probably upset a lot of people if the government recognized it as a legal partnership between two consenting adults, because then everybody go, oh, you're just treating it like business. It's like, well, you know, I've told people before, it's like, if you don't think the state treats marriage like a business, stop and think about it for a second. You know, the state will recognize it, places taxes on it, makes you get a license. They treat it like a business. So, I mean, maybe the state should call it, you know, partnerships and just get away from the word marriage. Because you can dissolve it. You know, the state will dissolve a marriage a whole lot faster than a church will. So is it really a marriage, or is it a legal recognized union? I think we need to get away, you know, from that word as far as the states go. They don't want to, because they make a lot of money with it. And, of course, when they, you know, in a lot of time in the past, some of the historical aspects of marriage is the state was able to some degree, regulate who got married. So,
well, that's true.
I just assume they get out of the marriage business, stop using the words, you know, and just call it a union or a partnership in the eyes of the state, and just, you know, the state is not our, it's not our moral compass, it's not our religion. Really, as far as legal matters, as far as financial matters, that's where the state begins and ends, and it's after that, get them the hell out of this.
Well, I thought it was an interesting poll question. Interestingly enough, you know, there's a slight majority to the people who believe yes. There's people who believe no. Let's move on a little bit. For you guys who want to call in, by the way, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers. You guys on the listening queue, as always, we appreciate it. Thank you very much. But hit that number one on your dial pad, and we'll know you can get on air. You know, moving on just a little bit, man, with this politics and even more going on. I found something very laughable today. And I tell you why. There's a big coup going behind the scenes at Metro Council. Jim King has got a couple of people, and they're trying to oust David James from District 6 from the caucus, the Democratic caucus altogether. And basically, from what I'm being led to understand by a couple of insiders, is this is because David James is actively campaigning against incumbent Metro Council member Attica Scott in District 1 in favor of Jessica Green, her opponent. The reason this is interesting to me is because the party said that they will not, cannot endorse anyone during a primary. Yet in Metro Council District 9, the last count I had was 14 people had signed up in a Democratic primary to replace Tina Ward Dukes when she resigns at the end of the year. And there will be a general election. We have a Republican running in that race as well. But Mayor Greg Fisher went on record and endorsed one of those 14 primary candidates, Bill Hollander. Bill Hollander, of course, is one of those, you know, insider lawyers. He used to be, I think, the managing director for Watt, Tarrant and Combs. But a big money guy, one of Fisher's East End rich elite people. And Fisher went out and has already went out and publicly endorsed him. And is also apparently going to run a fundraiser for him and everything else. What signals is this in, Ed?
Well, when I saw that article on FPL, I just basically referred to him as the Gestapo. I mean, what it comes down to, you know, Fisher can do what he does because they're not an incumbent. But basically what it says is if there's an incumbent and you don't like them, I mean, if they go Judy Green on you, if they go Barbara Shanklin on you, you can't lift a finger, nor can your staff lift a finger to aid in any way somebody who might be challenging them. So I'm like, that's, you know, we were talking a while back about the prosecutors being forbidden to run for judgeships, and this just blows that out of the water. I mean, what's to come of it when you have substandard candidates or people who have performed poorly, namely right now like Shanklin, and somebody who could step up and really get some stuff done, somebody who could bring credibility to that. You can't, as a councilman, as a council person, you can't support that person, or they run you out of the caucus. I mean, you talk about circling the wagons and then breaking out the Gestapo. You lose your freedom of speech. You support these other incumbents, or you're done.
Well, Horlander, of course, supported Greg Fisher. Or Holler, of course, has supported Greg Fisher. I mean, he's given him $1,000, the maximum amount, in his primary and general elections. I also paid $500 for the helping pay off the Anak event and things like that. But how can you get here as a party in the whole world this, that, you know, if you can't support somebody in a primary because party rules say so, you can't publicly support them, especially if they want to consider the incumbent like Attica Scott. Well, Greg Fisher is the incumbent mayor of Louisville, probably, you know, basically the top Democrat in the city. And he's allowed to go out there and endorse in a primary, in a fielded primary of Democrats. to me, that's about as hypocritical and about as much garbage as you could possibly come up with, John.
Well, I mean, never set rules that you yourself don't have to follow. That's the first thing in my book. You never set a single rule that you yourself exclude yourself from. As far as it goes, though, with endorsing candidates and all that, I think it's really just a joke at this point. I think most people on the whole see that so-and-so endorsed so-and-so, who really cares? You know, it's become so so corrupted, the entire process in of itself, it's something like this. You expect more than anything. And when someone says they endorse someone, I want to know, A, how much money did they give them? B, is it legal? You know, that's to me, if they give somebody money legally, that's fine. But you have rules where you're not allowed to endorse someone. Well, I'd like to question that rule. Why are you not able to? But the rule does exist, then you shouldn't break it. I don't think the person who created the podcast should be exempt from it either. But.
Well, it's really interesting because, I mean, you know, there were other people during this primary that supported Greg Fisher in his mayoral campaign as well. But if his good friend and close personal rich buddy Hollander doesn't win, and maybe he's not going to have as much support as he thought he was going to have. And, of course, you know, I mean, with Hollander being a former managing partner with Hyatt, Tarrant, and Combs, who do city business, you know, really, truthfully, this is nothing more than a political elite trying to handpick a council member. That's what I agree with WBF.
This is typical of politics anymore. Really.
Well, of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, I agree on the Fisher thing. Absolutely, he's trying to bring his people in, but for the Democrats, you know, I like it. In this case, like I say, it just amazes me that the way they force their members into, you know, to toe the line. It's so no matter how bad, no matter how rebellious, no matter how embarrassing a council member is, you can't endorse somebody who may be, you know, a 10 times better. You can't endorse them or the party will step on you. I look at that and I compare it to the Marilyn Parker race, the first one. When the Republicans had a problem child, they absolutely came out and endorsed his, you know, the incumbent's primary challenger, who was Marilyn Parker, because you know, otherwise, you find in a lot of cases you get some quality candidates, and the people who have, you know, the ability, the connections, my God, if you think of how it limits a challenger's ability to raise money. It's like you can't go so far to say that if you're an incumbent and an incumbent in your party's running and you like their challenger better, you probably can't even give a recommendation to a potential fundraiser. You can't do anything. You have to look at the challengers and say, hey, I'm an elected official, I've got pull, but, you know, and I have connections and I have street creds, but I can't even be seen with you, you know, because they'll ostracize me.
I'm turning against the two-party system more and more every day. You know, George Washington has he said it's very clear the two-party system would basically be the end of democracy. And it really is just the Bloods and the Crips. It is the red and the blue. You support your clique, you support your team, or you get left by the wayside. You know, they have turned it. It's not about that anymore. It's about who's on our side. Who agrees with me, who's on our team. We want to keep that guy around and make sure that there's more of us so that even if you do get caught doing anything wrong, somebody, you know, moves it around and nobody ever gets held accountable. You know, you've got the same person, you know, all around you. It's always the same voice. Nobody ever gets held accountable. And it's exactly because of this. It's one team against the other team, and the individuals themselves are almost insignificant.
Well, I'll tell you what is insignificant. You've got to take a break. So we're going to take our first break of the night, folks. We're back in just a few minutes. I understand John's mic is cutting out. We're going to try to fix that while we're on break. And in the meantime, we'll see you shortly. You listen to the Aspiration Show here on the MV Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
The two parties, the Democrats here in town, apparently are going to do their usual thing and start thanking each other in public during the primary and some other news going on. Because we keep going back to this Walmart story, especially here in Louisville, and I tell you why. From what I understand, now I'm cutting out. Goodness gracious. Who knows, man? I tell you, we are... strange. We continue going through this. Monday nights are typically bad for some reason with BTR because we cut out a lot with BTR on Monday nights. I don't know if it's because it's the first day of the week or what, but I apologize. But long story short, we're having some things going on now with the Walmart situation because Jessica Green, the daughter of the late Judy Green, former councilwoman District 1, who was impeached from office or removed from office, has decided to run against Attic Scott for that seat. Jessica Green, of course, was put up to running and working on behalf of Kevin Cosby, Dr. Kevin Cosby, of St. Martin Church. And, of course, you know, we've already passed some stuff about what's going on with him being sued and everything else right now. So now, since Attic Scott has been out there, as the communist leader in chief for District 1, you know, because she wants the Walmart to come here and pay whatever wages she tells them to do. They better be unionized, and all employees better come from right around there. Well, now Kevin Cosby and his band and Jessica Green are going out there finally and saying exactly the right thing. Only because of the Attic of Scott hatred. But yet a group of them out over the weekend at Dixie and West Broadway, you know, talking about how we need this Walmart at that location. Finally, some people in the West End are standing up, regardless of what the backstory is, and saying, hey, look, we need you here because we need jobs no matter the terms. Is that a good or bad thing?
No, I think it's a great thing. I mean, you know, I know a lot of people have a problem with Walmart, but truth be told, I have a problem with any big box retailer that comes in there because, you know, somebody like Attica Scott who doesn't have a payroll unless the government and taxpayers are signing the checks for L.A., you know, you got a lot of people out there who are going to have their ideas about what should what people should get paid. But the fact of the matter is, you've got to look at it for what it is. It's a vacant lot with a fence around it and a bunch of weeds growing up through an old factory floor. That's what it is. It's nothing. It's a blight. And you also got to look at it. Is, you know, whether you like or dislike or approve or disapprove of how Walmart treats their employees, which, you know, I never seem to see any that are real pissed off about being there. They all seem happy to be there. The fact of the matter is, you know what, it's just like their logo, just like they're saying, you know, live better, spend less, or whatever that saying is. If without putting a Walmart in a location like that, you're really depriving people of their free market choices. You're going to say you're going to pay, you know, whatever the local, you know, the store around the corner charges for diapers, or you get to drive down Dixie, or you get to drive down Bardstown Road, or you get to, you know, you get on a bus, go out to the east. You got to go find yourself. Yeah, you got to go where you got to take a trip, or you're paying what they're paying. And the fact of the matter is, Walmart has good food prices. They have good household item prices. They have good clothing prices. There's a lot of value to be had there for that neighborhood, and it's not the richest neighborhood. So, you know, for Etika to sit there and say that, I'm like, wow, you know, why don't you just look at your people and say, hey, get on the bus and go to, you know, if you want to shop Walmart, you ain't doing it here. Get on the bus and go somewhere else. Or, you know, pay $3 for a gallon of milk when Walmart will sell it to you for $2.25.
Well, here's the deal, though, because, you know, and of course, Etika Scott sends out her, you know, her mouthpiece. You know, to go after the Kentucky Alliance Clean Parks. One of those other jokes, in my opinion, a Congress who thinks they should tell business how to make a living, demanding the living wage and all the other stuff, to give Etika Scott's point of view. But it's interesting because even Milton Seymour, you don't hear about the Justice Resource Center anymore. It's Lewis Coleman died, you know, and then Matty Jones tried to handle it for a while and he got run out. But basically, Milton Seymour is the acting director of the Justice Resource Center. And even Justice Resource Center is out there begging for Walmart to come to West End for a change. And, you know, one of the biggest arguments is for some of the mom and pop stores, you know, everybody saying they'll lose their business and go out of business. However, we've got business owners there in the mom and pop stores. They're saying, oh, no, a Walmart would help us because it would bring more people to this area because our shops don't compete with the type of product and the process that Walmart has. So, you know, you've got that argument there. Go ahead, John.
Well, I'll say this. I love to see people that say that they would rather pay that little bit extra to keep a Walmart out of the town. I really do. And I am on that side of it. I would rather see less and less Walmarts. They've already manipulated our economy so badly that they control so much wealth, it's ridiculous. And what happens is every time, I mean, this is an argument over a few years ago, they're going to put a Walmart, and they're thinking about putting Walmart up somewhere, and there's a big, you know, hoopla about it, and it ends up being a major debate over and over and over again. And every time I see the same thing happen, they build the Walmart, and they get everybody riled up, and then they build the Walmart, and people go to it, and then people complain about losing jobs. I really blame people on the whole. For all the people that complain about Walmart, everybody shops there, everybody does, and it's one of those things for me that, yeah, if you're going to complain about it, then you're just a hypocrite if you go and shop there. And I think there's a lot of people that complain about Walmart because of that. But on the whole, I would rather see Walmarts. I would rather see people being willing to pay that little bit extra to keep the mom-and-pop shops around, to keep small businesses around. And I think that Walmart really does hurt small business on a major scale. And I don't like seeing one, you know, there's a monopoly aspect of it. I don't like seeing one business with a monopoly for everything. I mean, they've got clothes, they've got food, they've got many restaurants in every one of them now. There's a Subway, you know, something every single one of them. And you've got, you know, everything you could possibly think of to buy, you can get it at Walmart. And to me, this is a bad thing for one company. I think about Idiocracy. I think about the movie Idiocracy. And I think about the giant warehouse, the only store around anywhere is a Costco. It's one giant store for miles. And you got that one big guy that says, welcome to Costco's. I love you. You know, it's it really hit that in and of itself is what I think of when I think about Walmart. I think about one mega corporation that owns a monopoly on so many things that small business is just stuck out to a point that they can't be competitive because everything's made in China, made here, made there. It's not American made. There's so many things that aren't American made. The profits are going elsewhere. It's just, it's bad all around for me. I could make a show out of this.
Well, it's interesting to me. You know, because I just think it's funny that now we're finally getting the other side of this, which is exactly where we were talking about getting to just a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? Well, I'm glad to see this. Meantime, we have even more, because now we're into Kentucky. Guess what? This whole gambling issue we've been talking about forever now, we expected them to do something in this session. We know they're going to continue fighting every chance they get.
I was busy playing Texas Hold'em on my phone. I wasn't.
Yeah. Well, apparently we're at the halfway point of the 60-day session, which is a long session in Kentucky. And even though they're fighting for this, for expanded gambling, basically telling us this is dead. Speaker Pro Tem Larry Clark sponsored two gambling bills in the House. And he even went so far as to say that the gambling issue basically is at the funeral home. What do you think about that, Ed?
Well, I made a joke the other day on social media that if there's gonna, you know, if we can't get casino gambling in the state, maybe we should have pari-mutuel betting on whether the Kentucky State Legislature actually passes anything worth a crap. I tell you what, I can't begin to tell you how little I care about the gambling issue. You know, it is on one. They can't seem to get it right. They just and it's amazing. So it's just cheap entertainment for me. I don't, I know how to gamble, but I don't really gamble. So, I look at it as, are we really surprised? I mean, the only legislation we seem to be able to come up with is every once in a while is can you carry your guns here or not kind of thing. I know John wants to get into that, but I mean, it's a waste. I look at the legislature and just think, so what? You know, we're in the long session, we're in the short session. So what? We'll be in the special session in the spring. Big deal.
I love that this got brought up with me on the show tonight. I absolutely love that this got brought up. I'm going to make this as clear as I can. I'm glad that I could get brought on here. Maybe I bring a different perspective that you all haven't approached it on. But I'm going to say this a few different ways. One, I love Hold'em. Looking at it from a player's perspective, Hold'em, I've played in the Louisville Poker Tour. I've played in different places where they hire you to play at some charitable event, this, that, and the other. I love to spend. I love, absolutely love having to drive a half an hour over to Indiana, let me tell you that much. I go to Indiana, I play at Horseshoe, and every time I see so many people from Kentucky there. And when it comes to state legislators, they have such a screwed up mentality when it comes to gambling. And I understand we're somewhat in the Bible Belt, et cetera. But when it comes to gambling, they say you can gamble with money on stock markets. On the state level, they say you gamble money on horse racing. They say you can gamble with bingo. But it's about they want to allow you to gamble on. And some of it comes down to poker being legalized. And they have a rake in a booth. They don't make a lot of money, but you look at issues that come about this with slots, especially. They said that, well, let's bring slots to Kentucky, but let's only allow them at Churchill Downs to completely negate the purpose of bringing slots to Kentucky. We're saying that we want to legalize something to better it for Kentucky, for the Kentucky Derby and for Churchill Downs, etc. We're saying we want to legalize something to better things for the state to generate tax revenue that we are losing millions in that go overseas to Indiana. We might well be hemorrhaging money, the amount of money that goes over to Indiana that doesn't stay in Kentucky because it's not legal here. They're not preventing anything. It's the same as so many other things in government. They put in laws that prevent nothing, absolutely nothing, that are just designed to put the system how they want to put it for the guys that are in charge at the moment. And if you look at horse racing in Kentucky and the gambling issue, and this is a prime example of you cannot do this. You're not going to go over the end. You They cannot continue to say that slots only be illegal if they go to Churchill Downs. I mean, at this point, they've already said there's nothing wrong with gambling. We just want it where we want it. And they've already said there's nothing wrong with gambling. We just want the kind of gambling that we want to allow. They've already proven themselves to be such hypocrites that it's beyond me that anybody's putting up with it. I'm surprised. Well, I mean, nobody really goes out and protests anymore on anything around here, without seeing. But I'd still like to see some bigger outcry about this. I mean, I understand that you issue like a smoking ban, and not everybody's a smoker, so you can see why people wouldn't necessarily be of business rights as much as they would be in favor of trying to get smoke out of the bar because they don't like smoking bar. But in this issue, you get something like gambling, and you say it's already illegally. Churches do it. If a church is allowed to gamble, tell me in the Bible where it said God is the only one that is allowed to rake in money from a craps table. I don't understand the logic that goes into some of these people. When they allow gambling at churches, they allow gambling for charities, and they allow gambling for this, that, and the other. And they keep pretending that somehow gambling is illegal here, and it needs to stay there. I don't understand the logic. That's about all I can say about it.
Well, as we've always said, too, I mean, I wrote a legislation a couple of years ago for all of this. basically, you know, we already have legalized gambling here. We call it charitable gaming. We have slots already with paper tabs, pool tabs. You know, we have Monte Carlo nights for churches and everything else, or just an unlimited duration. This whole argument, a moot point that we fixed or should have been fixed 3 years ago when we wrote the red legislation. But, of course, always politicians want to play until they can't play no more. But it is interesting that Larry Clark is saying that this legislation is dead. Steve Beshear is now saying, well, it's still a work in progress. And, of course, the gambling opponents basically say everything is dead as well. And Paul Chitwood, the executive director of the Kentucky Baptist Convention, if you want to listen to this guy, he says if the gambling bill were a horse, it would likely be on its way to the soap factory. So I guess we'll have to see what happens going forward. But it is a very interesting thing going on.
The smart ass response right now is going to be, so what are the, you think the odds are pretty long that gambling is going to get put through now? What would you say? You're playing the field 99-1? Anybody want to take a bet? Anybody given odds on the fact whether we'll get a vote or casino gambling anytime soon? Anybody want to take a bet on that?
No, but I do want to say, just to play devil's advocate, I wonder what would happen if just one year, people actually protested at the Kentucky Derby because gambling is illegal. I wonder if one year you had a mass number of people go out and protest the Kentucky Derby and actually pulled off a successful protest, if they would still keep trying to keep gambling illegal in this state. Because that's what it really comes down to. It's not about right or wrong anymore. It's about what's making them money. As long as they're still making money off of it, they don't care what you have to say. They don't care what I have to say.
Well, as far as the state goes, as far as a politician, it's not just about making money. It's about who's making money. They want to make sure their cronies are making money so that directly or indirectly, they're going to get a piece of that action. That's what it is. Otherwise, they just legalize gambling and let every gas station have a slot machine, kind of like I've seen it up in Wisconsin and some places. Yeah, it'd be a little more wide open. But no, they're trying to get the right amount of control, and limit it enough, but expand it enough that the politicians and their inbred cousins or whatever can get some peach jobs and make some money off this. They're not in it for the free market, and they don't give a damn about the money coming to the state. They're trying to figure out how to control it to where the money can come to the people who will make sure the money comes to them.
Exactly, and it's not a moral argument either. And I think in a lot of cases they try to use morals and values to try to control situations like this, when really it's about making sure they keep the money in their pockets.
Well, It's really the simplest thing, because what it all boils down to is whatever horse industry wants, the horse industry is going to get. And I'll be quite honest with you. You're only halfway through the session right now. It's really the deal is here that they're trying to appease at this point, because no legislation is going to get passed or anything done until at the very end of session, especially when it comes to gambling bills or anything controversial. So one of two things happen here. They either pass it in the midnight hour, or they go ahead and have an agreement to have yet another special session wasting taxpayer money to discuss further.
Special sessions, right?
Well, that's what they do. Let's go to the phones. Hello, Mr. Holliger. How are you, sir?
How's the Springsteen and Martin show tonight?
Well, we're still here, Mr. I'm taking it as a good thing, apparently, with all these sound problems.
Okay. Hey, listen, I think Ed Martin and you guys are on the right track with this, but I think that you're getting just a little bit narrow in your focus. You guys want to make this an issue that the private interests are trying to hurt the government, okay, in terms of revenue. I think that you guys are, again, you're in the right church, but I think you are not looking at all the pews. This is, from where I sit, guys, this is just the latest example of the expansion of fascism. And in this case here, fascism is designed as the control of government by business interests, okay? I think it's pretty clear in Kentucky that the Churchill Downs business interest is pervasive. And they are controlling this issue. Okay? They're controlling this issue. It's not to make the politicians money, but the politicians get probably just a tiny part of the payoff. It's to make sure that the Churchill Downs Corporation maintains their control over what they perceive as a limited amount of gambling money. Okay?
I'll say this, Tom, if you don't mind my interjecting. I agree with you on something that you're saying. And I've said that our politicians and even in our business world, we have a group of people in charge that are essentially an aristocracy or an aristocracy, I used to say, that was not taught to take care of the people that give them the money. And in aristocracy, you have a group of people that knew, how it would go, that they had to take care of people at the bottom, and that principle has been forgotten in the past decade or two. So the people at the top are essentially trying to get control. They're not trying to resolve this. They're not trying to help anything to anybody. They're trying to say, okay, now we have enough power where we can just control with an iron fist. In any case, you run this, we're in charge, and that's the way it is. But go ahead, Paul.
Well, Paul, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
I'm here.
Okay.
I had a very difficult time understanding any of that.
Yeah, I did.
It was choppy as all get outs.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I would say I agree with Paul on most of that. And I would actually go so far as to say when it comes to Churchill Downs in Kentucky, they really only care about one city. And that's, they care about Churchill Downs. I would go as far as to say, yeah, they're probably trying to control it. They want Louisville because that's where essentially a quarter of the population lives. And, it's not nearly as notoriously Bible Belt. So, and it's already proven that there's a lot of money going across the river. I think that's all they're just trying to make sure they lock that up.
Aren't we like in highest taxes nationwide or something like that? Aren't we like in
we're in the top 10.
Yeah, we're in the 10 in the United States as one of the highest tax cities. And there's still, even with being one of the highest tax cities, they still are losing all of this tax revenue to Indiana. I mean, the amount of money that we would generate and save is ridiculous. There's so much money there. But as Paul put it, it's not necessarily going to be going into their hands. They don't care about what money can be generated. If it's not going to them full circle, they don't want it. And that's just how it is now.
Okay, and since we're talking about money, here's something else we have to look at, too. This is becoming a very big problem real quick. We've all heard of Common Core. We know we've got retirement issues in this. We know we've problems in this state. We know the retirements are underfunded. We know we don't have enough money for schools. We're now finding out that this federally backed Common Core education program is going to be a major financial problem. Common Core has been approved so far by 45 states. Some of the states are already implementing standards for Common Core during this year, and most of the rest of them are supposed to be involved next year. And it's basically a national standard for achievement among the K through 12 students. The problem is that it looks like the states are going to spend up to $10 billion up front, and then it's going to cost as much as $800 million per year for the first 7 years that this Common Core initiative is up and running. Everything, all these schools are basically going to have Common Core aligned textbooks. The curriculum is going to be the same, and you're also going to have new teacher training, technology upgrades, new tests, new assessments. I mean, this amount of money, a lot of states are saying, holy cow, wait a minute. We approved this without knowing what it's going to cost. Where's this money going to come from?
Well, not even just that, but they can't give teachers raises, but they can afford $800 million a year for a bunch of – I don't even understand. I don't understand the figures, how they can even generate this high of a number for what they're going to do. Is it necessary to spend this much money for a what is this, to just universalize everything? I mean, is this the make sure that everybody's learning the exact same thing, even more the exact same way? What is this about the Common Core thing that is so great and so grand that it's worth $800 million a year? I can't even fathom how anybody is saying we can't get teachers a raise, or we can't get more teachers so that we have so many classrooms, and we can't do anything to try to improve the educational system. But what we can do is $800 million a year, $10 billion up for each state, to do what? To have a Common Core initiative? What is this? What is this doing? I want to see what this is supposed to do for us before anybody even thinks about putting it towards it. And I'm not seeing anything that's even supposed to come out of it other than we're going to institute this. Everybody's going to be the same. Everybody's going to have the same Common Core class.
They want everybody to be clones of robots with education. But, Ed, Paul, tell me. Well, I guess Paul just dropped off. My apologies. Paul, tell me, where is the money going to come from? The states are broke. Can't even afford the pension programs. We're $100 billion behind pension funding, basically. Where is this money going to come from to make everybody a clone when it comes to education? It looks like we may have lost Paul as well.
This might be an issue with the weather, too. I know that we've had storms moving in and out all day. It could be.
Well, right now we're running some major tests on the on Skype and everything else with the time situation, and it looks like there are some problems with Blog Talk and Skype tonight, so I'm not sure where they're coming from. For you guys that are still with us, we appreciate it. But we are closing in on the end of the hour, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up a couple of minutes early. This is a concern to me for the sound quality for you guys. John, final thoughts?
Final thoughts, honestly, I like issues brought on tonight. I want to see, like I said, I'm on somewhat of an opposing end of this, Martin, at least. And then I know he agrees with me on individual liberty, et cetera, but when it comes to the issues we talked about tonight, I like to see diversity. I like to see less Walmarts, more small businesses, even if it costs a little bit more money, that there aren't any monopolies on products. I like to see less government interference, and especially when it comes to situations like they talk about spending hundreds, millions of dollars, and et cetera, I like to see them make less costly decisions, and I'd like to see more people that not only get involved, but inform themselves. Stop turning a blind eye to things that are happening, because everybody's the same thing that is against being involved in politics. Well, I don't like to do it because it stresses me out or doesn't really make a difference to them. What they don't realize is this is going to stress them out. This is going to affect them regardless. Every single one of us out here is being told how to live, why to live, what to live for every single day. And we need to start seeing some more individuality. We need to see people with resolve that are willing to pay that little bit of extra to keep more diversity, that are willing to sacrifice a little bit to keep more options around. And I guess just a public service announcement, be an individual and fight for individual liberty whenever you see it.
Well, and as far as I'm concerned, there's a lot going on. We'll get into the Concord tomorrow night and a few other things. We're going to wrap this early tonight due to weather and sound quality problems probably related. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow night, folks, at 7 o'clock right here on the M Radio Network. And we'll be back then with Mr. Martin and John Will. Until then, we'll talk to you later. Have a great evening. Thank you so much for listening.
Break. Brothers turn the ship to